Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio. Also, Apple, YouTube, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, wherever you're listening to us, it's the Dark Mark Show. I am Dark Mark, the goth comedian. Sad to say, once again, Hannah's not here. My co-host, Grandpa, is ill still. So, and I was actually going to have Grandpa here because he has a big crush on one of our guests, and he saw a movie of another one of our guests and thought it was great. And no, that was a nice spit on your grave. But we wish Grandpa the best. And Hannah says she loves everybody in the studio.
Oh, we love her.
Hey, Graham.
Hey, Hannah.
Or at least the three of you. So. This is a star-studded – I don't even know where to begin. This is a star-studded – this is a long time coming. We've had all three of these guests before, but never in this combination. And I better get all the talking out of the way because it's going to be quite – award winners. This two-time Independent Spirit Award winner, Academy Award nominee, and all the casts that you've been in – the Three Billboards, Lincoln, all of them have been nominated for SAG Awards. One of the best actors. Actually, Roger Ebert said, an amazingly versatile actor. He's right here to my left, John Hawkes.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, hello, everybody. Hey, yeah. How's it going?
And not too shabby on her own right, two-time Emmy Award winner.
Yeah.
And in the San Diego Women's Hall of Fame, and a fellow Minnesotan.
Minnesota.
Yes.
You betcha. I know how to use a wood chipper. Oh, yeah.
Yes, my future ex-wife, Bree Walker, is right there. We love Bree Walker. And right next to you is Saturn Award nominee for Best New Actor for the movie Deadly Weapon. And also been known for Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and 4, Melrose Place, being in Tiger Beat, I Spit on Your Grave, and in the band with John Hawkes, and he also puts on all sorts of shows. I probably met about a year ago, and I'm glad he's my friend, Rodney Eastman.
Likewise. Thank you.
Yes.
Dream warrior. He's a dream warrior.
He is a dream warrior, that's right.
And who knew that you two guys were such good musicians when Mark took me to see you perform. Oh my God. And then your whole spiel about how we sort of remember like dial-up telephones and stuff. I almost peed my pants.
Thank you. Yeah, you gave us one of the greatest compliments we've ever received. You said your music is poetry that could change the world, and that really just floored me. And funny story, I don't know if Mark told you.
Tell it on the air. I want to hear.
But I had no idea who you were when he introduced.
Because you're younger than I am.
Wait a minute.
Wait.
Hang on a moment.
No, hold on. I may be slightly younger than you, but. He introduced you. Oh, this is my friend Bree, and we were talking, and then Mark and Bree left the show. Mark and Bree had come to a show at a club in Glendale called TG, and after you had left, John, we were standing outside having a cigarette, and John said, "Oh yeah, it was so cool, and Bree Walker was here," and I was like, Bree Walker was here? What? Yeah, Mark. And I lost my beat.
You did.
I was like, that was Bree Walker? I grew up in Los Angeles. I saw you on TV every single day.
That
comment coming from you, poetry that could change the world. I just told John, I said, like, who would that mean more coming from than somebody who really kind of knows what shape the world is in, having had to sit through it and relay, you know, the best and the worst news.
And help change the world.
You somehow made it darkly funny. that's what resonates with me. And funny.
We try to make bitterness sound beautiful.
Now, John, you recognized Bree right away.
I did. I moved to L.A. in 1990, and I feel like somehow I knew of you even before. I'm not sure. Maybe passing through and watching television.
Some nefarious past history
Some
we have in common.
Past, you know. So I guess our Minnesota past.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Oh, yeah, we Minnesotans,
we stick together.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You betcha.
Now, you're from what town in Minnesota, Bree?
Austin. They make spam, the Hormel right. meat packing plant. Right. That's all that's there.
Right.
Some parts are meat.
And John, you were born.
I'm from Alexandria, which calls itself the birthplace of America because in 130 years before Christopher Columbus landed in America, some Vikings carved a stone and left it nearby my hometown. Now, that stone was in the Smithsonian Museum for many years and then eventually debunked, but we still believe.
I did not know that about little Alexandria.
Oh, yeah.
I've hitchhiked there a few times.
Indeed.
I didn't know I was in an auspicious hitchhiking location.
You were.
Did you ever hitchhike to Austin, John?
I didn't. I hitchhiked around Minnesota, and I passed through Austin from Des Moines on I-35.
So I-35 is still there. Mm-hmm. Spoke to my cousin Joel yesterday.
How far away are those two towns?
Oh, a couple hundred miles.
Yeah.
Because my mother grew up in Albert Lea next door to you, and so that was a 222-mile trip from our home to
wow.
To
well, last time you've been back there.
Back to Alexandria. I was there this fall. I'll go back a lot. My brother and I bought a little cabin up there.
Oh, so you got the cabin.
Got the cabin on the lake. Oh,
so pretty. Yeah. And you do some bass fishing.
Oh, we'll do some bass fishing. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
Big-ass bass.
Indeed. Catch some crappie. We'll catch it all. Yeah.
And it's beautiful. They have one season. It's called October.
Yeah, well, actually, we get two seasons in Minnesota. We get winter, or we have three seasons, winter, road reconstruction, and winter. So it's a very lovely place. I recommend you visit it.
He shoveled a lot of shit. I mean, snow.
Yeah, it's very similar.
And he came to Hollywood and shoveled a lot more shit.
I've done both, and they're remarkable.
And some people come to Hollywood and shovel a lot of snow.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, up the nose, too.
If you will. That's You catch my meat.
See, I was hoping we'd get some good Minnesota banter here, but I real quick, because I just want to do it, we're sponsored by Audible, audibletrial.com/DMS, free book and two free Audible originals. Doomy's Home Cooking. I don't think they have this in Minnesota, but it's great vegan food here in L.A. and Toronto. Hustler Hollywood. There's a code wherever you're watching or listening to this.
Ooh, you get a discount?
20% off and a free gift.
Whoa, yes. I need 20% off of everything I need from Hustler.
Well, trust me, I've already got something.
Bulk shopping.
I've already got something picked out for you. And also, Spy Associates. They have GPS tracking. They have all sorts of James Bond spy stuff. They've got cameras and smoke detectors. They've got bug detectors. If you think somebody's spying on you or you want to spy on somebody, go to Spy Associates. There's a code wherever you're watching or listening. 20% off every order over $249. So I want to do that real quick.
Wow. Well, I have to say, I'm sitting here with my jaw dropped because Mark does this with no cards, no notes. Yeah. He knows his sponsors. He knows what they
do. Well, I had two last time.
Amazing.
Now I have four. So
good
basically,
work.
you can read. You can eat, you can have sex, and you can spy on people.
All at the same time? That's right up my...
I will tell you, though, I forgot last time, and the last show we had with you guys was 80 minutes, and it was great, but it barely scratched the surface. The Halloweenies podcast, which it was focused on every Halloween movie. Then they moved to Nightmare on Elm Street. Now they're going to do Friday the 13th. I tweeted I was going to ask Rodney this question. I forgot to this time, so indulge me. Rodney, in the movie Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, Dream Warriors, probably your most known part and a great movie. I think my personal favorite of Nightmare. In the first scene of you have a teardrop tattoo. The rest of the movie, you do not. Why is that?
Well... You know, I wondered that myself for many years.
Okay.
And and that was actually the first shot that I did for the movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in makeup, they put on the teardrop and then it never came back again. And
now, was that your idea? Was that...
No. It's in the script.
Mm-hmm.
And I always... chalked it up to somebody in continuity just forgetting to mark the script and put it back on again. But interesting note, I recently was cleaning out my house and I found my original Nightmare on Elm Street 3 script.
Right.
With all my notes written in it because I couldn't talk. So every scene I was in, I wrote down what my character was actually thinking.
Right.
So it was a great little time capsule. And also, you know, there's pictures drawn on it, and there's also you know, directions to the local pizza place on some pages, and you know, it turned into sort of a scratch paper book. But I was reading through it, and I read that scene, and what it actually says in the script, it says, we meet Joey Crusell,
mm-hmm.
who stares lovingly at Marcy, the naughty nurse,
mm-hmm.
and it says, we see Joey Crusell peer through the door, and he has drawn a teardrop
right.
on his face. So it never said he has a teardrop tattoo. It says that he has drawn a teardrop tattoo on his face. And I still don't know why I drew the teardrop on my face. Maybe I was an aspiring prisoner, you know, an aspiring felon.
Gang member.
You know? Yeah, right.
Because maybe you were sad. Was your character sad from the previous episode?
My character. Well, no, that was the first time I was in.
Okay,
yeah.
Got you.
Guys always seem to be raising the bar somehow.
Speaking of raising the bar, watch this segue.
And you must have washed your face, too, because you know, yeah. otherwise it would have been there the whole
right.
time.
I used to wash it every day back then.
Yeah. So Joey is clean. He washes his face. He washes his hands for 20 seconds. He does all this. When do you hear this?
Coronavirus has changed the world. COVID-19.
When do you hear this segue? Now, that was a teardrop tattoo. You asked me what specific movie John was nominated for the Academy Award for, and that was to play a character named Teardrop
Have a teardrop tattoo.
Wow.
Why not?
The director didn't like that. We put a little X there instead, a tiny little X.
Right. There was something there. Yeah. Okay.
Do you think the teardrop is symbolic of something that's the pathos of sadness or the reality of the demon? Because, you know, in like the HBO show, The Outsiders, the drinker of tears mm-hmm. is one name for Satan. The drinker of tears. Mm-hmm. And it's made me wonder about teardrops.
Yeah, I feel like the tattoo has to do with how many people you've killed, right?
Yeah.
There's a whole code of it. If it's filled in that you've killed somebody, mm-hmm. but if it's empty, you've lost somebody to violence or, you know.
The different things to different people, but yeah. I think it was.
So you studied teardrop then, Rodney. You studied.
Rodney just did a lot of time.
That's for a different show.
That's an episode.
But I was going to say, Winter's Bone was the first starring role for Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes.
And she wanted.
How did she end up?
Yeah, doing? She didn't do much after that.
Well, that's
that.
What I was going to ask you.
Okay.
When you're acting with this 18-year-old yes. whose experience was she was on the Bill Engvall sitcom.
Indeed.
Did you see that, okay, this is going to be a star?
I kind of did. I mean, I didn't not to sound too actory, and I'm not real method or anything, but I thought it would be a good idea for her character to be a little afraid of my character. And I thought as a human being, I wouldn't be at all mean to her or rude. I would always say good morning, but I just tried to spend no time with her and let her not know me much as a person while we were doing it so that I could be more like the character for her maybe.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you remained the enigma.
Yes.
Well, you're very enigmatic in the movie, but when you guys were acting opposite each other, were you like, there's really something going on here that's really special?
Well, it's really hard to tell, Mark, because I've worked on movies. It's, you know, I've been making movies for over 30 years, and it's still a mystery to me because, you know, sometimes as an actor, you work for someone else's close-up. In other words, the camera is tight on someone else's face, mm-hmm. and you're right next to the camera so they can look at you and have their reactions. And I've had the experience of shooting someone else's close up and giving my all from off camera. Many actors do their best work off camera. I know I do. I'm always good. It's like, can we turn it around again? Now I figured it out.
Right.
But anyway.
Haunts you in the night.
Several times.
But you're usually a supporting actor, so.
Well, several times. That's a joke. I mean, they wouldn't do it for anybody probably. But several times I've had the experience of thinking, oh, that person, bless their heart, wasn't very good. I didn't feel a thing. And I walk back to the trailer and then see the movie a year later, and that person's amazing in that scene. And other times I've had the same experience where someone's made me weep, and I walk back to the trailer and I watch the movie, and they're not good in the scene mm-hmm. somehow. So something happens when you put a frame around that image that I'm not seeing at the time, and when there's context and music and things, and really good editors sometimes
oh, sure.
can really change something. So I didn't really necessarily know she'd be nominated for an Academy Award, but you can tell when someone's present when you're working with them and whether Yeah, and also I must say, and Jennifer was very present, but Deborah Granick is a master director. She's just a phenomenal director. And so I don't know that she actively pushed too hard on Jennifer and I as far as what she wanted. She wasn't that kind of director, but I think she was – she knew when to let us go and when to help, and that's a great gift for an
right,
actor.
Right, right. Another great cast. And I've heard that too. I've heard – I think it was – I'm trying to think. I think somebody was acting with Michael Caine or something, and they're like – I didn't know what he was doing. Or like a director was like, I thought, you know, when he was looking at it, he thought it was bad. Mm-hmm. Then he watched the playback. He's like, it was perfect. It's even better than I thought it was going to be. So
the Robert Duvall story on Colors.
Oh, is that what it is too? Yeah.
Is that one too on day one where the director said, you're not really doing much. I don't know if it's Colors. But anyway.
Probably, yeah.
And his advice was, you know, watch the dailies, watch the rushes. You know, you don't realize when you come from being a stage actor that it's a real difference. So I started out in stage, and when I began to film act, I was still living in Austin, Texas. I remember doing a particular film where I played a MC at a high school, and I was real big, and all the crew was coming up and saying, "You're so great," and all that. And then you watch the movie, and I'm way over acting.
You're over the top,
and
yeah.
So, in other words, those people from 100 feet away thought the performance was really good, but unfortunately, the camera is like sitting in your lap in some instances as an audience. Remember, you're right next to someone. So, I learned that if the crew's bored with it, don't be too worried about it. You know, so you can't always really tell. You know what? What's
and
going
the intimacy
on.
It has its own life.
Exactly.
I mean, I think I didn't realize that by going to see the film Little Women, I didn't think I'd actually want to see that because it was my favorite book as a kid.
Yeah. Right.
And I thought, there's nothing that can be as good as my favorite book as a kid. But as I watched and I started to appreciate the intimacy that evolved between me and this reluctant experience I was expecting.
I love that.
But you've acted too.
So you liked the movie in the end.
I did.
Yes, I love that.
I heard it's great. Yeah,
I really was surprised to have liked it. Maybe part of it was that it's the first movie I've actually taken myself to alone.
Cool.
Ate the whole damn bag of popcorn. I did. God damn it.
No shame.
I would have gone with you.
And me
too.
And
is that your experience too?
Well, just sort of taking off where John, you know, kind of where John was going. That I've seen in a lot of young actors and a lot of first-time directors,
right?
That same thing is like happening all the time, where there's the excitement of seeing that big performance, and the director's like, "Oh, that was so great," and I'm just kind of just being an employee and just sitting back and just going, that's not going to be great.
It's going to be too much.
That's going to be way too much.
Right.
No wonder all you actors are so fucked up.
It's true.
Well, you've acted.
Yeah.
You were in Carnival.
I still am.
Hopefully you make a comeback, but you were telling me that when you were regular on HBO's Carnival, you really loved that experience.
Yeah. Oh, I did love it.
Nice.
Yeah. But who wouldn't love being a circus freak?
Yeah.
I mean, born into the role, and then you get the role. I remember my brothers saying to me when I was young and they were a little bit older that the only job that anybody would give a person like me, because I'm a freak, I was born with ectrodactyly, which is kind of, you know, it's an unusual deformity, yeah? I don't exactly have fingers. I call them paws or claws. But now there's that wonderful actor who, the comedian, who's done a big...
On America's Got Talent.
Yes.
Great.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
And he's made ectrodactyl. I've just forgotten his name.
I will Google it. Go right ahead and see him talking.
I laughed my ass off because he talks about how you cannot button the top button. I can't button any buttons.
You told me that joke 5 years ago.
Yeah, well, I've been living the joke. It's one of those things where sometimes the difference in you, and we're all different as individual humans, right? But we all carry that fucked upness with us.
I think for many artists and many comedians, I think it's the ones we end up loving the most who find the thing about them that is the most humiliating and embarrassing and shine with it. Lead with it.
Yeah.
Bring it
One flew
first.
Over the cuckoo's nest.
Yeah.
Edward Scissorhands.
Mm.
Ad nauseum. Yeah?
Yeah.
It's like, it's about the difference in us that makes us want to actually know each other and not just do texting and social media.
Ryan Nymiller.
Yes,
Ryan Nymiller.
God bless
you. He's great.
Yeah.
But you... But he
sounds Minnesotan to me.
Yeah, I point out Carnival because
it's something in the water there.
It must be.
You've been in a lot of movies and TV shows, but usually as the anchor woman. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, The Chase.
The Chase comes to mind because my neighbor now out in the Harbor area has a dog named Charlie, named after Charlie Sheen.
Right.
And Charlie Sheen was a consummate gentleman. Mm. Working with him was amazing. And
really?
He was going through his stuff at that time. But yes, I played Wendy Sorensen, and you know, and she was an anchor in the sky and all that, you know, the helicopter thing. And yes, very much I have parodied myself, and that's a wonderful gift.
Charlie Sheen, the whole job is a parody.
Oh, he was so cool.
Really?
Yeah. Fresh flowers in my little star trailer every day.
Aww. Yeah, I mean, isn't
he was such a bad boy, huh?
Isn't sort of all show business really just a evolution of the sideshow from, you know, before TV and traveling shows?
Well, and that's what Connie
the gypsies and
exactly. Yeah. Gypsies, tramps, and thieves. And during the Great Depression is when it all expanded, of course, because there was not TV. There were only these traveling circus shows. Mm-hmm. And because the Dust Bowl days allowed a lot of flim-flam people to do their thing, we had a lot of flim-flam people on the set of Carnival, some really good ones. And some of those actors actually got so typecast, they couldn't find jobs.
Michael J. Anderson, who was the dwarf in Twin Peaks, was in there.
He was my, you know, we were commenting on him as he walked by in the scene where I'm standing at the hanging clothes with Deborah and Christofferson, wonderful actress, and she's the bearded lady, and I'm me, and you know, Sabina the Scorpion Queen,
right.
and I'm the ex-wife who's come back to haunt him. Now I've got my own little flim-flam circus show, and I'm there to take over, but yeah, things get complicated. So as he's walking by, and you know, he's kind of a little guy, and I look at her, and it's the favorite role I've ever been able to play with these words that were not in the script: "Not everything on him is small."
You ad-libbed that one.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they kept it in.
That's great.
If I may interrupt, that I've always thought that artists and criminals live right next door to each other.
They do.
Yeah, that
they require each other.
There's something very similar to the criminal mind and the artistic mind. Not that I would know anything
about that. Wearing a teardrop on your face that you drew yourself. Uh-huh.
That's the least of it. But speaking of that, I was going to ask you because last year you were in probably, I think, the number one independent movie of the year, The Peanut Butter Falcon.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, today I was just trying to catch up with your whole film career. God, you are a storied guy and understudied, I think.
Oh,
but
underappreciated, I think.
Oh, just perfect. But I like it.
I was going to say, now, Shia LaBeouf.
Yes.
Is he all right, or is he?
He's amazing.
Oh, yeah?
He's unbelievable. I mean, we hear stories about people.
Yeah.
And you live in this town. They're just often not true. I mean, I've dreaded working with certain people that have been deemed difficult to work with or whatever. And a lot of times, they're just people who want things right. They're kind to everyone who's below them on the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
They might have issues with some people above them on the ladder occasionally. But that's only because they want things right. They want to be in. They don't want to be in a piece of shit.
Right.
And so that can earn you a bad reputation sometimes, I suppose.
Yeah, the perfectionist thing, which is, you know, people attribute, I think, to addictive personalities.
Perhaps.
But, I mean, John, Rodney, isn't it true? And Mark, you know, we've talked about this a bunch. We all have addictive personalities. When we talk about normalcy, that's the aberration.
Yeah.
There is no such thing as a true normal human that I've ever met.
No.
I don't trust them.
You wouldn't trust anyone like that, right?
but maybe one of the most charming and innocent people
Shia, if I may, is an amazing human being and an unbelievably great actor. I've worked with Daniel Day-Lewis. I've worked with a lot of fine actors in Shia's.
He's right up there.
Wow.
Right up there. But the guy who was the lead character, Zach, I don't know his last name.
Yeah.
In the Peter Berger Falcon, who is?
Gottsagen. Zach Gottsagen.
Zach Gottsagen. He's got Down syndrome, or
he's a Down syndrome person.
He authentically is. Huh?
Yes.
Yeah. That's the thing. Last time you were here, I was talking about how great the Sessions was, and I know that before you played that role, you said, "Isn't there a guy with polio that could play this?"
Mm-hmm.
And so it must have been
a disabled actor of some kind. Yeah.
Yeah. So it must have been gratifying to be in a movie where the star is a disabled person, and he was great.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Zach's a delightful human being. He's a joy to be around. I never really had a Down syndrome friend per se, but Zach is so. I don't know. I don't want to get trickly, but he's kind of an ideal. He's an angel. He's an ideal human being. Yeah. He certainly has his struggles and his frustrations, as we all do, but there's a part of him that's so large, that's so much love. It's just he's funny as well. He's got great timing. He's
your eyes are all getting kind of teary right now, John.
Well, he's a
cool guy and a good actor.
He is. And it's been really fun to get to spend time with him after the shooting and do events with him and such like. It's been really nice.
Wow. And did I read, because I got to see this movie. You saw the movie, and I know you liked
incredible.
It. Although, yeah.
Yeah.
Yellow Wolf is like your partner in crime, the rapper.
Is. Yeah, he's also a really, really cool man. Really good guy. Yeah.
So I gotta see this movie. I finally saw Martha Marcy May Marlene.
Oh, great. What do I owe you?
How are those residuals, John?
Which John plays.
I got another penny from
John plays a cult leader. With Elizabeth Olsen,
community leader.
Community leader, excuse me, pardon me. But
an influencer.
Elizabeth Olsen's first starring role, and once again, you're like
the Olsen twins.
Yes,
her sister,
her younger sister.
Oh my,
yeah.
They've
also an amazing human being. I wish I could sit here and talk dirt, but I mean, I feel like I'm in a business where 99.9% of the people are really cool.
Really cool, yeah.
I've run into a few assholes in 30 some years of filming, but not. Too many.
Yeah, you know, Rodney, but myself, but that's
what other than you two.
And
me.
No, but
all I gotta do is look in the mirror.
But you got to sing and play guitar in that movie. You must have liked that.
That was really enjoyable to sing and
play guitar. And you guys are such good musicians. I mean, I had no idea. I've respected your work as actors, but you know, when Mark said come see these guys play, you know, and this lovely little neighborhood lounge.
Mm-hmm. It was a great bar, yeah.
I had no idea.
Yes.
You're real musicians. So that's what you're this weekend. You're going to be doing that, huh?
Yeah, I'll
be doing it at a theater.
Trying to impress you.
You know anything about it?
That's why.
You always impress me, Dark Mark.
Oh, stop it!
It's your darkness I love most. It's the light of my life.
Yeah. We are going this weekend.
Yeah.
I don't know which day. Probably Saturday or Sunday. It sounds like.
It's Friday. You're opening Friday.
Friday the 13th. Rodney and John and the Meaning of Life.
Indeed.
Now,
that's auspicious title. That's a lot to live up.
Set the bar low.
I'm not going to ask what the meaning of life is because people should go to see the show, but to find out. But Rodney, what makes you and John qualified to tell us the meaning of life?
I love this one.
I would say absolutely nothing. I don't think that any person can justifiably animate the meaning of life for anybody else on the face of the earth.
But by God, we're going to try.
But we are going to try. Yeah,
and I think that. Excuse me, Ronnie. I feel like, you know, I've never trusted answers anyway. I've never really trusted a person who says this is the way that you have to be an actor. This is the way you have to live your religious life. This is how you should do it. When someone says they know. I don't trust that.
N-O and not a K-N-O-W.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. But when someone asks good questions, that's wise to me and that's provocative. And we're going to ask some good questions and we'll have some answers too along the way, right or wrong. You know, we'll we'll be exploring. It's a quest.
Yeah, and I think the whole point of the play is for everybody in the room to have an experience together and to sort of all of us figure out the meaning of life and what it means to ourselves as individuals. I think that's the goal.
That's the essence of what I felt when Mark, you took me to see them play. I never expected that what would happen is I would laugh, I would have tears of recognition about how, you know, you live just long enough in life, and if you're lucky, you live long enough in life see the irony and the moment of dark humor constantly reappearing. And it was, that's what got me. I couldn't believe how resonant it all felt to me. So
I'll tell you something else. They had a very good singer that was before you guys that brought a big crowd. Mm-hmm. And after she left, she went long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really long.
Really long.
Yeah.
She went about an hour after she was supposed to go. And her crowd left. So Bree and I got really good seats. And as the show progressed, you could see the room getting fuller and fuller and fuller until it was jam-packed and everybody was enraptured.
Yeah, and even with Gen X and Gen Next kids, you know, they got it.
That's interesting. Rodney speaks about that a lot.
The play Rodney and John and the Meaning of Life, we have a Instagram. It's on it opens March 13th at the New American Theater. That's in Hollywood. They've also got an Instagram and a Facebook and all that. You can find the play there. It's
1312
Wilton Place. Yeah, in Hollywood.
On Friday the 13th.
And
ooh, you're
it
brave.
Is Friday the 13th. Yeah, Friday the 13th.
For you.
Good luck day.
closing on the Ides of March as well. Sunday.
And this is a snow moon season.
Beautiful moon tonight. So what you just touched on about Generation Xers and Generation Nexters and Millennials. So what I've been really busy with lately is my partner and I have a company called Smarties and Dummies, mm-hmm. and that's sort of our umbrella company, and we do comedy shows every Monday at the North End of Hollywood, and we do a music night every other Sunday called Sunday Songs.
Right.
And it's all acoustic singer-songwriters. It's really tightly curated. We get incredible, incredible talent on the show. And we started it just because those are the kind of shows that I wanted to go to.
Right.
It was totally selfish. And it's just, we started in November, and it's just really mushroomed very quickly. You know, we get probably on a Sunday night in Hollywood between 75 and 100 people out.
That's great.
To every show. And it's called Sunday Songs because John and I, you know, over this past year have stripped away, we played with the band and we've stripped away a lot of that. And it's just become just Rodney and John alone with two guitars. And we just started noticing when we were playing those shows, the crowd would just be dead silent. You know, drums and bass and volume give the audience an excuse to talk. But when you strip all that away, people pay attention and listen. And so we just started saying, wow, it's like church, you know, really.
And the vibe I got I said to you, Mark, I said, it feels like early Bob Dylan.
A little bit.
And so those are so we do those shows in Hollywood, Sunday Songs, at the Bronson Bar. And the next one is March 22nd, and it's the same vibe. It's six artists, just 20 minutes each. It goes through really quickly, great talent, and during their sets, you could hear a pin drop, literally.
Oh,
and I've just noticed that, you know, I, in the beginning, thought, well, this is like a mature audience's sort of cup of tea. But as it's expanded, you see younger and younger people showing up. And it's like some people stumble into the bar just to see their friend, or they just happen to come in one night. And it's medicine. And I think like people really need it. And people come the first time and they keep coming back. Like they don't know, as if they didn't know that they needed that.
Yeah.
Silence, just a place to go and be quiet and pay attention in this world that's so loud and in your face all the time. And also with the young people, John and I have been having sort of a debate about it, that because there's so little truth and integrity going on around us right now, that maybe we're at the beginning of a wave where it's going to be cool to respect your elders again.
That would be amazing. That could be a watershed moment in humanity.
To listen, that may, I just feel like young people are sort of cluing into, wow, it's not all about youth and bling, that maybe sort of our elder statesmen, if you will, have something to say. You know, because we have that memory of the dial telephone, and have that memory.
We are the last generation that has the dial up telephone.
Well, I was going to say, and everything's not on this. It's all about human interaction.
Yeah, and we have that memory of human interaction before Facebook, and that memory of when the world, the United States especially, was kind of a kinder, gentler place.
Yes.
You know? Those were the MySpace days. But,
sorry to get all philosophical.
I was going to ask you, the show.
That's all we got. I mean, if we don't live in our heads in the good place where philosophy is what we do, then what are we, just organisms just sucking up space and consuming?
Yeah.
Well, this is a great segue, because I was going to ask Bree, and I know I probably ask this question every time you're on the show, but what happened to news?
Oh.
From when you were giving the, you were reporting the news.
You know, I watched change during a lot of it seemed to come out of the fact that we could do live coverage. We can call it sometimes, it's the OJ moment. There are many moments that we can talk about. But the fact that, for instance, I want to draw a line to where we are now, we're talking about the coronavirus. It's a panic. And if you can't create panic, then you're not doing your job. That, to me, was sad in the essence of, I had this lovely, exalted period of time in my career where I sat at the anchor desk, but I also stayed in the field as a reporter. Mm-hmm. And what I had originally done was consumer reporting in San Diego, where I started in television news and segued from rock and roll radio, playing vinyl across from, God rest his soul, Don Imus. In New York City.
I didn't know you worked with Don Imus.
Yeah, Howard Stern was just an intern. Stern the intern, we called him.
Oh, really? Yeah, and Don Imus used to make fun of Howard Stern?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we did, because he was the punk kid on the block.
Of course.
I'm aging myself, but I like being aged.
No, but you were there in the CBGB era.
Like good cheese brie.
Exactly. No, but I was going to say, so you're saying the panic equals ratings and clicks, and that's what they're doing.
Yes. I mean, I don't know the underpinnings. All I can tell you is that when the corporatizing of individual networks were, what happened.
Clear Channel.
Yeah. And so, and Walter Cronkite told me one day, because he was the guy who introduced me when I went to New York City, he literally came down from the... I call it the clouds, because, he's God. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to walk me into the local station of WCBS in New York.
Wow.
And he said, Bree, you're here in the last of the golden years. Enjoy it.
Wow.
He knew. He saw what was happening.
And on that note, I think John and I have something to say about that.
Do we? You want to do a little piece of the show?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it.
Is what we've gained worth what we've lost?
And are all profits worth the cost?
Are we listening? Are we talking?
Waking up or just sleepwalking?
Asleep at the wheel?
Sleeping with the enemy?
Sleeping sickness?
Sleeping pills?
This city never sleeps!
Let sleeping dogs lie.
Good night.
Sleep tight.
Thank you.
Oh, it's just a little poem.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a little. Oh, that's great. So it's going to be songs. It's going to be spoken word. It's going to be a,
indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of activity we'll have. Yeah. For people.
Pity the pithy.
Well, and
some pith is good.
That, I know. I like
I love that. I can't wait to see it.
I don't want to take the pith out of you. But
no. But you,
by the way, you
I'll go pith on it.
I'm very pithed off. I have to ask you on air about somebody else you teased. Which was Rush Limbaugh.
Oh my goodness!
Who just got the medal for you? Now before we get into this, the guy's got cancer. Is one human being to another. Yeah. I hope he has a full recovery as painless as possible. As a broadcaster, I find him mediocre at best, and I think other people have done the shtick better than him. Mm. But
his father owned the radio station,
right?
So the first radio gig I had was I was fresh out of broadcasting school, and I landed a gig in Kansas City, not Kansas City, Mo. So there was no soul. There was just this little cornfield, and
so
I worked
Minnesota,
on the FM side. It was Kansas.
Okay.
Yeah. So I started there in Kansas City, Kansas, and he was on the AM side, which was the great big studio, mm-hmm. and his dad owned that whole series. Mm-hmm. Of radio stations.
Was his dad okay? Was he all right?
You know, he made fun of me. I was the pot smoking hippie who rode her motorcycle through the cornfield. But I was also the only one that could calibrate. Back in the day, we had to go climb up the antenna tower and calibrate. Wow. And I was the only person on the staff who had a first class FCC engineer's license.
So you climbed up the tower?
Yeah.
Make sure the signal was right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And he kept saying, I hope she gets electrocuted. Then she won't have any fingers at all. But it was okay.
Man.
You know, it was fine because...
He sounds like an asshole.
All I'm saying is the comeuppance happened very quickly because the very first interview I ever did was with Mick Jagger, who walked past the AM studio, great big fancy studio, Rush Limbaugh's studio, right to my little closet of a studio, sat down for an hour and a half, and played the music. He literally queued up the records, queued up the vinyl himself, and chatted.
You don't have many stories, Bree.
We're just getting started. So what do you think?
I don't have many stories.
What do you think about him getting the Medal of Freedom? You should be getting the Medal of Freedom.
My God.
Exactly.
I would give him the Medal of Breedom, but he wouldn't like where it would fit.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that. I was stunned and amazed to God bless him that he got it, but at the State of the Union address was
ridiculous. And like I say,
you know, everything is just a farce. So it's like we're finally at this point where the emperor does have no clothes. Yeah. And my Trump story though—that's a fun one. Because I was at a boxing match. I used to be married to a boxing commentator, Jim Lampley, who was the HBO boxing guy.
Yes.
We were married for like 20 some years. So I went to a lot of boxing matches. And one time,
and you were mobbed one night.
Occasionally, I would go to the boxing match with Jack Nicholson because he was a buddy of Jim's and ultimately mine, you know, and we would sit together. So Trump makes a beeline, seeing Jack Nicholson, makes a beeline over to us, reaches his hand out in front of my face, across my body, to touch Nicholson's hand, and Jack is so cool, and and he basically looked at him like, what kind of asshole are you, you know, but he wouldn't touch my hands because he has a phobia about disability, as we've seen with other reporters. He literally skeeved. He did one of these, you know, when you're revulsed.
But
is that the right word?
Yes.
Revolted.
Yeah.
He yanked his hand back, and Jack looked at him like, and then Jack took his hand away so that he couldn't shake his hand. Donald Trump, and then he became our president. Well, you know, I did grow up in Minnesota, so I could only vote Liberal Democrat.
Right. Yeah, DFL. Democrat,
right.
Farmer,
that's
Labor.
Right.
Funny,
and, of course, they've switched sides many times, too. Yeah.
And funny you should say that, because my father, who's very much of a conservative, loves you, and you guys got along great when you met him.
He's a wealth. You know, he thinks things through.
Yeah.
And he watches a lot of good stuff.
But he's a blue-collar guy. And when he saw the show with you guys last night, he's like, yeah, I love those guys. They're great. Down-to-earth guys. And I don't know. He should start watching Deadwood because I think he would really like it. Actually, I tried to get him to watch Small Town Crooks.
Yeah.
Which is a movie that you starred in that Hannah and her grandfather just love. And they wanted to mention that. But we're almost out of time, but I got to ask, my friend Jack Slammy, who's a promoter in Las Vegas, had a couple Deadwood questions.
Okay.
Were you happy to revisit your role of Saul after an abrupt ending to the original series, 10 something years later?
Oh, yeah. I've said this before. I've had greater personal success, I think, as an actor, but Deadwood's the best job I ever had. It was such an amazing thing to return to that world and that amazing set and wardrobe and animals and
HBO does it right.
Shit, all of that whole town and all of the amazing cast members. So it was a real joy to come back.
And that's where Bree knows you from, because I was like, he was in Deadwood. He's like, oh, yeah, Saul.
Yeah.
And the other question was there any other role that you read for the show when you auditioned?
I feel like I was given the script and told to kind of pick what I wanted to audition for. And I don't recall what ended up happening. You know, I'm sure I was aiming higher than I should have.
I want Swearingen. Yes.
I probably did.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, you don't know the world at all. You just think, you know, I can be some kind of badass if I need to be. And then I actually did get offered a different role, which I won't say what that was.
Okay.
Because another actor came in and just fucking killed it amazingly well. But I was lucky to get to be Saul Star for all 36 episodes in the movie, so it worked out good.
And you're not Jewish.
No, I'm not Jewish. I might be, actually.
Okay.
Honestly, yes. My brother, yeah, we're working through a family controversy.
Oh, well, here we go.
Like that. Either way, I'd be. It would explain a lot.
Yeah, I think we're Ashkenazi.
Indeed. That would be my link, yeah. Apparently.
And you know, I was actually in the Deadwood movie.
Were you? What did you do?
I was an extra.
Okay.
Because when John was doing the series, I never got to audition for it.
Yeah.
And years later, when they were making the movie, I was like, John, is there any parts? No, it's all the original cast, you know?
Like, right.
And I was like, you got to get me on as an extra then. I just got to be on. I'm such a huge fan of the show.
Oh, sure,
I'm like,
yeah.
I got to be on the show. So I got to go in like one of the last days on a day that John was working. So I was definitely the most well-treated extra in the history of HBO, no doubt. I'll be in John's trailer, please. Thank you.
Send the card over.
Yeah, and
we played guitar.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I got to wear, you know, they got me all dressed up in a bowler and a big fake mustache. It was incredible.
I gotta go frame by frame on the Deadwood movie.
I do a nice swipe past camera.
But I was gonna before I left, I was gonna say, not too long ago you had a Nightmare on Elm Street reunion at the Whiskey, or was it the Rainbow?
That's right. Yeah.
And how was that?
It was
all the Dream
amazing.
Warriors, except for I guess Patricia and Lawrence were busy.
Right, and also, well, there was a few people missing, but it was amazing time. We did a read of the original script
right
in front of a live audience.
That's great.
And you
had no lines.
It was incredible. I had no lines, but much like I wrote in my script, mm-hmm. I made cue cards.
Okay.
And most of them funny.
That's great.
So when they would read stage direction about me, I would just reach down and hold up my cue card. So I had about 10, some were just sort of normal, like what my character would be saying, but some, you know, traded, you know, made jokes about the scene that was going on. I just thought you can't take it too seriously. And so it was really great. And
was Robert Englund part of it?
Yeah, Robert Englund was there, and he was amazing as always, and I've always had a great relationship with him. It's a long story. I'll go into detail.
Next time
stay
you're
tuned.
On the show,
yeah.
Yes.
Next episode,
more,
I'll tell you the whole story. Pretty great run.
You guys got to go because you got to rehearse. I could talk to the three of you for. I mean, this could go on all night. But
it's very fun.
We should take this on the road. Right here.
Turn off the mics.
Yeah.
And keep
yeah, yeah.
But one last question.
Put wheels on the table. We're on.
Because last time I saw you guys was at the Hotel Cafe, and you had the full band.
Yes.
Yes.
Is the Rodney and John, The Meaning of Life, going to be a full band or just the two of you?
No. I think part of the appeal of the experience is that it's no amps, no mics, no demon electricity. It's just in a very small theater, very intimate space, and the songs will come as they should come with no barrier between performers and audience. So it's, you know, we love playing with the band. They're amazing players, but right. we also really like our words being heard, and people like Rodney said, get quiet when there's not a lot of things other than a couple of guitars and a couple of voices. So here we go. It's if it's before March 15th and you're listening and you're in Southern California, just Rodney and John on the Meaning of Life. Google will get you a lot of information right there.
The easiest way to get information is go on the Instagram and Rodney and John.
Right.
Just follow Rodney and John or Rodney Eastman.
Yes.
And also follow Smarties and Dummies.
Absolutely.
Smarties and Dummies.
Smarties and Dummies. That's
that's IES, Smarties?
It is, yes. And also
Smarties like the vegan candy.
And if you can't make it out to the play, come to Sunday Songs on March 22nd.
And
you will be glad you did.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's I can't wait to see it. I don't know what day I'm gonna see it, but it's gonna be, and I'm gonna post this show early, as soon as I get it, so that people can listen to it. But a lot of people are gonna listen down the line. But
I literally was laughing through my tears watching you guys do your thing. And just you know, simple acoustic, nothing blown up, nothing exaggerated, like truly intimate.
But when Rodney did his love song, I saw a little. You were cuddling up pretty nicely.
Yeah.
Something exploded over there. But wow, Bree Walker exploded on my love song.
So,
indeed.
Rodney and John and the Meaning of Life. I'm sure this won't be the only time it plays, but it is premiering Friday the 13th, March 13th, through Sunday, March 15th.
Three nights only,
8 o'clock?
7 o'clock on Sunday, or maybe
7:30 on Sunday.
Well, go to Rodney and John on Instagram. Go to Rodney Eastman on Instagram.
Please.
Or go to newamericantheater.com. Tickets are on sale now. The New American Theater, 1312 North Wilton Place, LA 90028. And Rodney just got some new headshots. You're probably going to be acting pretty soon.
I am. I'm coming out of my third 3-year retirement in 30 years. every 7 years, I got to take 3 off. And I'm actually finishing a great independent film at the end of this month. I already got shoot dates going.
That's great.
And it's called Burden of the Shepherd. Uh-huh. And I'm really excited. Going to do my last 2 days on it. And literally, we've been shooting this movie for 2 years. So really great. That's if I can lose 10 pounds by the 31st. So I think I can do it.
Right. Go, buddy.
Yeah, there you go. Nobody's ever said that to you, John.
I've kind of maintained a similar weight from the time I was 20 years old.
You have.
I don't know why I've tried to put on weight, and people don't like when I say that, but I'm unable. I'm just a skinny.
You're a skinny guy.
I'm a lanky. I prefer sinewy or ropey.
I saw a review.
Lanky Yankee.
A review called you gloriously gaunt.
Oh, how nice.
We were working with a technician today for some of our music, and he sort of sidled up to John and he said, "I just really got to give you a compliment." And I was ready for a perfect storm and he goes, "I just really got to give you a compliment. How much do you weigh?" How tall are you? I wish I was as skinny as you. Didn't even mention acting.
Oh, we love vacuous Hollywood sometimes.
Not from Dusk Till Dawn, not Perfect Storm, Miami Vice, not American Gangster.
How much do you weigh?
Quite an accomplishment.
Who needs awards? Who needs awards?
And Bree, you're laughing so hard you're crying. Now you're going to be starting a new radio show in San Diego soon.
Yeah, I'm going to do a podcast. Yeah, probably launch on radio. But yeah, I'll be working with two producers that I've worked with for more than 40 some years. Two guys. Yeah, They're finally retired.
So you were six at the time, and
that's right.
and you know
six
the,
again.
You know the great my partner in Smarties and Dummies, the great Angela Manzan.
Yes.
Is a San Diego native.
That's right.
So she knows Brie too, huh?
Well, oh yeah.
Well, we're gonna have to.
Well, she's younger.
She's younger, but she
knows.
Yeah.
No, Brie.
Everybody's younger. I kind of like that.
Oh,
that, I don't mind.
I came up with my favorite new self quote this week. I said, "You're never old. We're just always getting old."
Mm.
Oh,
that's when we're lucky.
You might have to put that last minute addition to the meaning of life.
When we're lucky.
Anyway, so Rodney has the social media presence. Rodney Eastman on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm goth comedian.
No Twitter.
No Twitter. Okay. Just Facebook,
Instagram.
Still
a full-time job.
I'm goth comedian on all social media.
Yes.
John and Brie like the privacy, but.
If you want to follow me, just keep a safe distance.
I was just going to say.
But one last thing before I go. When was
Brie Walker, no stalker. Thank you.
When was the last time you were recognized, and what did they recognize you for?
Gosh, I'm trying to think. Today, yesterday. I mean, you know, things happen, but I'm trying to think.
At the studio.
Oh, last night, actually.
Oh, okay.
No, last night, a young gentleman named a few things, which is like, oh, my God, you're in this and that. And the other.
Yeah.
So,
I
can't be more specific.
Well, one thing before you go?
Yes.
Because I'm staying. I'm taking
over. Are you? Okay. No. Okay. Welcome to the Rodney Eastman Show.
And if it was the Rodney Eastman Show, I'd be welcoming Dark Mark, goth comedian, to the table. And I just want to say, Mark, you're so funny. Mark, if you get a chance to see Dark Mark doing comedy. And he's been, this is not to plug myself, but we do a comedy show every Monday at the North End of Hollywood. And we do an open mic every Monday at 10:30 after the book portion.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark has been getting up at the open mic the past few times, and you've just been so funny, funnier than ever. You get funnier every time I see you.
I'm going there right after.
That makes one of us. I can't even go to my own comedy show tonight. I have to go home and rest.
And I'll be on
rehearsal.
Your show. I'll be on your show on the 23rd. Apparently, I'm booked on the 5150.
Nice.
So, good. What was the last time somebody recognized
5150.
You?
We know that one.
And what was that for? For Nightmare? Or?
The last time someone recognized me was my former probation officer at Whole Foods.
That's a nice reunion. And Brie, what was the last time somebody on the street recognized you? And
gosh, I didn't a couple days ago, huh? Yeah, it was just a couple of days ago. My friend Darlene, who's sitting right over there. Mm. I kind of don't remember when it happens, but it happens in odd ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you were living on Venice, it happened all the time.
It still happens, but in odd ways.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and besides the Nightmare on Elm Street films and I Spit on Your Grave.
And it too had to do with probation.
Right.
Yeah. I've got, true story. You know, I've got 100 credits on my IMDb. So I get recognized
CSI
like
NCIS.
No, I never get people coming up to me. I just get the weird sideways glances in a lot of places where people are like, did I go to high school with that guy?
Right.
Weren't you that guy in that thing? I get that's kind of my recognition.
Yeah. And LA is the city of dreams, right? Because either you are in somebody's dream or they've seen you in a dream or they've seen you perform a dream in their head. It seems like LA is that magical place.
Certainly
where
is.
It's an interesting connection. Everybody kind of assumes they're going to meet someone famous.
There's some magic here in the studio. Rodney, one more thing.
One more thing. And really, not to be pithy again, but you know, I'm 52 years old, and I've kind of grown out of the needing to perform to get attention, and I'm far more interested on putting the spotlight on other people now.
And it's great.
I'm far more interested in trying to make other people famous besides me, and part of that is also selfishness and ego, because I've spent my life being a color on the canvas, and I'm just far more interested on holding the paintbrush and kind of painting the whole picture.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You are the medium.
You're in a weird way, Andy Warhol, who you used to party with.
Oh, my goodness. We did party at Studio 52.
54, but
54.
We'll have to save that for
the 52 was the really cool place. Yeah. No one got in there, but you and Andy.
That was the
That's script. Your next show, Studio 52. And we've got
Let's do it before I turn 53.
Yeah, I don't want to hold you up, but before we go, tell us about your friend's animal rescue.
Andy Warhol had a very, very whispery voice, yes. He had very good cocaine, too.
Tell us about your friend's animal rescue before we go.
Oh, yes, Darlene, who's over there in the corner.
Darlene.
She's the queen of animal rescue. We met in the parking lot of Albertsons in my new little hometown in Northwest Orange County, which is one block over from L.A. County. So, yeah, we hang around La Habra because that's where we both live. And then I got involved with her in some dog rescue TV show, which was on the Hallmark Channel a few weeks ago, called The American Rescue Dog Show. And it outnumbers now, by far, the viewership from the Westminster Dog Show.
I love it.
Nice. And it's AI, and it's all these, a lot of gimpy dogs, you know. Some of them are in wheelchairs.
Sure.
There actually was a dog, a very overbred dog. You know, this is why we don't breed or buy while shelter pets die. So this little dog didn't even have any eyes.
Oh.
So that's what happens when we overbreed these animals. And now we don't need breeders ever, because there are plenty of dogs that need homes. Mm-hmm. We don't need breeders.
I have my girl and I adopted a dog, and I want to put him in the show next year. He will win. He's the cutest dog in the world.
Oh, good. Well, then, you know, you got the connection.
And very strange.
That's it. That's what we like.
Plenty of personality.
Darlene, is there a website or something we can go to and help the animals?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, we'll send it.
Okay. Well, I'll put that. I will put that on the show.
Yeah.
Like I say, we could talk forever, and we haven't even scratched the surface.
Thank you for the plug on these creatures that can't speak for themselves.
No. I attribute
and the dogs.
I attribute
thank you very much.
I attribute
somebody had to do it.
There you go. I attribute the ratings.
The big dog just spoke.
I attribute the ratings to Bree. And once again, Rodney and John, The Meaning of Life, Friday, March 13th to Sunday, March 15th, New American Theater, Northwest Wilton Place. Like I say, I've known Bree for almost 12 years now.
Wow.
And I fall more and more in love every time I see you. And
it's quite
I met
mutual.
These guys about a year ago. I met Rodney first, and I'm humbled and honored to call them friends.
Oh, likewise, sir.
And everybody.
And restores our faith in Hollywood.
And we got to do a movie with the four of us, and everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Bye-bye.